Hi, and welcome to Cloud Cover. My name's Corey Fowler.
And I'm Nick Harris.
And I'm Scott Klein.
Hi, Scott. Thanks for coming on the show today.
Pleasure to be here.
So just for our viewers, what is your role at Microsoft?
I am a technical evangelist for SQL Azure.
Ah, great. So today Scott's going to be coming on the show to give us a bit of a demo of SQL Azure Data Sync. So he's going to take us through that scenario, and we'll have more on that later. But before then, what are we going to do, Corey?
Let's start off with the news. It's a good time to we start every show with it, so we might as well.
Okay.
So I guess the first news item, who wants to do the first news item? Maybe we'll do a little.
Let's do the first news item here.
Yeah, a little rock, paper, scissors for it.
Okay, yeah. So.
Come on, you can do better than that. One more time. All right. So as referee, we're gonna let Corey do.
All right. Well, if you didn't guess, we did a little rock paper scissors there, and we're bringing back the rock paper Azure challenge. It's a little challenge where you can build your own little rock paper scissors bot and compete against the world. So hopefully Steve Barks doesn't get in it this time, because I know he was number one on previous rock paper Azures.
Yeah.
So maybe, you know, with him being not at Microsoft anymore, people will have a chance to actually participate.
I don't know about that, because now he's eligible for the prizes.
Oh, that's true.
If you look at the prizes there, the first prize is a Nokia Lumia 800 Windows phone. Second prize, Xbox. Third prize, Kinect Sensor. So that's pretty awesome.
That is pretty awesome. So definitely a good reason for people to build little bots and deploy them out to Azure.
Yeah, so pretty cool. Although I think the rules are a little bit different to the standard rock, paper, scissors. There's like there's a third option or something like that. So the rules aren't the stock standard ones you play when you're a kid. They've made it a little bit more complicated.
Oh, they've changed.
Makes the game a bit more interesting. That's how it was in the first one. I assume it's going to be the same this time around. But shall we move on to the next item?
Yeah.
Right, so real world Windows Azure. So this is an interview with Adrian. He's a technology manager at the San Diego County Public Safety Group. So what they've done here is they've looked at a case study where for their particular group, they had a website for disasters. So the particular scenario they give there was there was a fire in firestorm in a particular area in their county, and everyone from around the world that had friends and family in that area, they're all trying to hit this website, and the website come down. So by the time they fixed it and then redeployed it, it was several days later, and they'd sort of not been able to provide the information to people that perhaps they may have wanted. So what it goes on to say is that they actually did an analysis to see how much it would cost for them to go and build out, you know, a solution with their own data center and, you know, have staff on board to go and, I guess, maintain that data center. So they come up with here, as it says on the screen, $350,000 to build the data center and then $80,000 per year just to maintain it. So they were looking at options that were available there, and they come up and they seen a demo of Windows Azure, and essentially they went out and built a Windows Azure solution. So their solution had the goal to support 120,000 page views per hour, and they're only using 3 Windows Azure instances for that. So end of the article, they talk about their cost savings, and essentially against the $350,000 outlay for a data center, they found with Azure they can run this at the capacity they need for $18,000 a year.
Wow, that's a pretty substantial difference.
Yeah. So
that's great.
Yeah, pretty cool.
It almost seems like a little bit of a theme. There's a couple of different disaster recovery systems built on Azure. When the tsunami went through Japan, a couple of our Japanese MVPs built a system for a very similar thing, just tracking friends and family.
Yeah.
So it's great to see that people are able to provide services like this on the Windows Azure platform.
Yep. Awesome. So shall we go into the last news item for this week? So essentially this week what's happened is we're recording a little bit early, so that's why the news is a little bit light. We've only got a few new things. It's Tuesday now. It's not actually Friday, so we do give our editor a few days to edit stuff.
That's actually why Nick is dressed up today. Although I think your tie's a little bit crooked. There you go.
Yeah, much better.
Yeah, well, I thought, you know, typically every news presenter that you see on the TV, they're always wearing a tie.
Very
so
true.
I thought I'd lift the game a little bit and perhaps challenge Nate for when he comes back to dress the part and wear a tie.
I think that's an interesting challenge.
Yeah.
Nate, do you accept?
Maybe.
Guess we'll find out next week.
Yeah, we'll find out.
Actually, it's quite good having you there in that spot, Corey. You're much, much nicer to look at. Must be
well, thank you.
Either the Mendacian or Manscara that you use. It's like awesome.
The Manscara.
I think Nate just got outed.
So let's just move on to this last one. So the last news that we have today is the Windows Azure Marketplace now offers more flexibility and opportunity to people that want to deploy their assets to that, or surface their assets through the marketplace. So the first thing that they've introduced here is promotional codes. So now if you're going to events, you can hand out promotional codes to the attendees such that they can get your services perhaps on some form of special offer. The other thing that they mentioned there is that they've now offered data cleansing APIs for developers. So there's 12 offers from 6 separate providers there. So that's sort of interesting as well. But I think that's really it for the news this week. So perhaps now we'll move on to Scott. So
okay. I'm ready.
Quite interesting. So we're going to talk about SQL Azure Data Sync, which is actually a service in preview at the moment for the for Windows Azure.
That's correct. So it's been out for a while in preview. They're working hard. The PM for SQL Azure Data Sync Services, Mike Morrison, who unfortunately we couldn't get for today, but that's who it is. Working hard on getting this ready for out of preview, but currently it is in preview, and there are a lot of great services and features in Data Sync services.
All right, cool. So I think from my prior experience, prior to joining Microsoft, so I was a .NET Enterprise developer, and about 25% of the apps that I went out and built actually involved a Data Sync component. So previously I used merge replication for building out Data Sync scenarios, and also Sync Framework. And I think given that merge replication isn't supported in SQL Azure, Sync Framework is somewhat supported in that you could go and stand up a Sync Framework service in a Windows Azure web role or something like that. And that's sort of cool, but it requires some effort on your behalf. So a lot of code, takes some time, so you need to invest in that. So SQL Azure Data Sync, on the other hand, provides this for you using a nice kind of layout that's sort of similar to what you'd get with merge replication in terms of the clickability and configuration of it.
Yep.
But there are some differences. So I think we'll move on to Scott to go and show us how that all works.
Perfect. Let's go.
Great. And now, our feature presentation.
All right, so what we're going to do is we're going to look at SQL Azure Data Sync services. And you mentioned merge replication and the Sync Framework. And anybody that's worked with replication and the Sync Framework knows that if you're working with Sync Framework, there's a lot of code. You have to work with the conflict handling and things like that. A lot of code you have to write to get that synchronization going. Merge replication, anybody that's done replication knows, you know, it's it can be a challenge at the same time, whether it's merge or transactional or whatever. So there's some challenges around, you almost have to be a rocket scientist to work with some of these technologies. They're great technologies, but it would be nice if we had the ability to do do synchronization without, you know, with very little work. And this is what SQL Azure Data Sync Services is. It's no code data synchronization. We can set up replication between multiple sources within just a matter of minutes, right, without any code. So we're going to illustrate that. So the first thing we're going to do is I have a database here on-premise called, just a very example, called Sync Demo. Yeah. This is just a scaled-down version of the Northwind database, right? So what we're going to do is we're going to use some of the services that were just recently released, like the import-export service and SQL Server 2012, to import and export and import that into a database into SQL Azure. Right. That database is then going to be our hub, and we're going to use that to do do synchronization, right? So kind of multi-step process, we're going to use, here's an opportunity to illustrate the features, import-export features of SQL Azure, of SQL Server 2012 Management Studio, right?
So hold on a second. So you mentioned a hub. I used the really early version of the SQL Azure Data Sync. I think it was V1, and I wrote a couple of blog posts on it. Is there still an agent that you have to download and install locally, or is it all managed in the cloud now?
So good question. So it's still all managed in the cloud. The only time you need the agent is if you're going to synchronize between SQL Azure and an on-premise.
Okay.
An on-premise SQL database.
Makes sense.
So that's quite interesting. So if I'm building out something that uses SQL Azure Data Sync, I can sync between Azure DBs in the cloud, but also my on-premise DB.
Exactly.
Awesome.
Yeah. Yeah, so the entire spectrum, right? So I can, I don't need anything to, I don't need to install anything locally if I'm just going to synchronize, you know, SQL Azure to SQL Azure.
Yep.
So think of it as the hub, the hub spoke scenario, right? One hub and multiple spokes, and I can synchronize multiple. And those spokes can be on premise, a mix of on premise or SQL Azure databases, right? So, but we don't need the agent if we're just doing SQL Azure synchronization. If we're doing it on premise, we do. Right.
Great.
So let's start by taking this sync demo database, and let's now let's also back up and talk about the really quick difference between a DAC framework 2.0. There's now what's called a backpack, right? Mm-hmm. So it used to be called what's a DAC pack. You guys know the differences between a DAC pack and a backpack is?
Backpack's the one you put on your back, and DAC pack
exactly.
Is something else.
Yeah. So you want to try?
Well, I was thinking the same kind of thing, backpack, but you're taking your data with you.
Correct.
Because the DAC pack used to be a data application, if I'm correct, and then the backpack is just basically the, because of the way that SQL Azure works, you don't want to have all the logging information because it's a shared service. So basically, the backpack is a scaled down version for a particular instance of a database.
Right. So the DAC pack is schema only. Let's just summarize it that way. DAC pack is schema only. Backpack is schema and data.
Okay.
Good to know.
So in 2.0, I can actually right mouse click. And so there's multiple ways to get your database from on-premise to SQL Azure. We're going to talk about real quick a couple of those. But in SQL Server 2012 Management Studio, I can right mouse click on a database and say export data to your application. Right? And I'll click next on the welcome introduction. But then notice what I have two options here. I can save to a local disk, which we're going to do here.
Yep.
I can also save to Windows Azure. And notice that the extension is backpack, so I know I'm going to get the schema and the data. Uh-huh. Right? I can save to Windows Azure, which means I can then push this right to blob storage. But in order for that, I have to have my storage account provisioned and all that. Right? So we're just going to save to a disk, and I'm going to save to a... I'm going to delete this because we're going to reuse this. So I'm going to call this, same thing, I'm going to call this Sync Demo Backpack.
Awesome.
Okay. I'm going to click OK. So Sync, notice it's a backpack. Okay. And I'm going to click Next. And it's basically summary. Here's what I'm going to do. So I'm going to click Finish. And what it's going to do is it knows it's going to extract not only the schema but the data. It only takes doesn't take that long just to extract, right? So I'm going to click Close. I'm all done. Okay.
Jeez. It's now, not rocket surgery.
It's not rocket surgery. It's it's actually really nice. So, you know, and so now I can do the same thing. So what I'm going to do here is I'm actually going to connect to my SQL Azure, an already provisioned SQL Azure server. Right?
Awesome. Where's this server located? Which region?
So now this server is South Central U.S.,
Right.
So I've got. I'm from Florida. So before moving to coming to Microsoft, that was closest to me.
Yep.
Right. So this is already provisioned. So this is called. There's my server. So I'm going to log in there. This is already provisioned server.
Yep.
It's already got databases on it, but we're going to use this one because the database I want to import to is there.
What's and your password?
password, capital P, okay, lowercase cool. S.
Remember that, everyone.
All right, so here's all my databases on there.
Right.
The great thing about this is that we don't have to create the database beforehand. So I'm going to right mouse click and just say on the databases node and say import data to your application.
Right.
Okay? And all I got to do is browse to the local directory where I save that, click Next. Now, again, notice that I can import from my blob storage already, right? And we can talk about that a little later, but right now that's kind of outside the scope of this. So I'm going to click Next. And the next step says, okay, notice it's going to create the database for me. I don't have to create the database. I don't have to provision anything. It's already there. So it's going to create the database. The important thing here, though, is the addition and the size of the database. Okay? You need to make sure that the database that you're importing the addition and the size matches or is greater than the database that you're importing.
Yep.
For example, you know, if the database is has 1.5 gig and I'm creating a 1 gig database, the import's going to fail.
Yep.
Right? Because it doesn't auto grow to the next size, right?
Will it warn you about that when you're trying to import something, or does it just try and go ahead and it's going to fail later?
It's going to fail. It'll tell you at some point. It's going to say, you know, if we click next, I think it says, hey, make sure, you know, there's that warning there. Right. Well, it does. So typically, I think at some point there it says there's a warning that says, you know what, make sure that your database is bigger than the one you're importing. Right. And you really want to make sure that that's true. Right. And then we're just going to click Finish.
Okay.
Now, so this will take a couple seconds, but notice, you know, creating database on the target, done. So I can actually go back over here, refresh. There's my data. There's my database, right? And so it's going through and creating, now it's importing all the data, creating the tables.
So you're pretty much just saying, at the moment, I've got some data on premise, and I want to test out data sync with Windows Azure. So perhaps the first thing I might want to do is to put this database and all its data up into SQL Azure.
Correct.
Such that you can create a sync hub, which is essentially the master.
Right. So in SQL Azure Data Sync Services, your hub, the master database, must be a SQL Azure database. It cannot be an on-premise, right? So step one is going through, the reason why we're going through this step here is we got to get the database from on-premise into SQL Azure, right? So we're going to take this is going to become our hub, right? So while this is going, now we're going to go through, let's go into, and what we want to do is go provision, go into the SQL Server, or SQL Azure Management Portal, or Windows Azure Management Portal, provision a sync server, and walk through that while this is going. So let's go back to the portal. I've already logged into the portal here. And so notice on the navigation bar, I have data sync. And this has been available for a while. Yep. What we're going to do is we're going to click on that.
In preview though, right?
Correct, in preview.
So we really, those people thinking of building out data sync services, we'd really love to hear your feedback on the current capability and what you like, if there's anything you don't like, or what you think should be included.
Right, that's correct. Yep. So there's some great functionality. We'll walk through some of this, but any feedback you have, we'd love to hear from that.
Is it going straight to your email account? Because I don't have that many emails yet, but I don't want to push my luck on that one.
So it's Corey F. at Dunker. All right, so what we're going to do is notice on the navigation, I'm going to select the data sync option, and I'm going to select the subscription that I want to provision this data sync server in. So I'm going to pick the one I normally work in, is the SQL Scott Azure, right? And I'm going to simply select provision a data sync server. Okay, and we have to agree to the terms of use, fine.
Yep.
The next step to say is, okay, in what region do we want to provision our server in? And again, just like everything else, we've got it, we're going to pick that's the subscription. But what region do we want to create our server in? We get the same list as everything else, right? So East Asia, North Central U.S. We're going to create this in the same region as my SQL Azure server. Because
the hub, the DB, which you just sort of pushed up.
Correct, but more importantly, I think, is because it's cost, right? So anytime that there's, you know, and latency and performance, right? Yep. So if my data sync server is somewhere else, right, we want to keep the performance going, and we want to put everything in the same region. So I'm going to select the South Central U.S., and I'm going to click finish. Okay, perfect. So there is my there's my server, and we get a server ID, and that's really not important for what we need to do here, right? But now we can start creating our data sync. So let's go back and look to make sure that our import is done. So we'll go back and sure enough, it's done. So notice it created our database. It created actually a deployment plan. So it's actually pretty detailed. And if you want to see actually more information, you can click on the success information. But it's all done. We can actually go back over, you know, here and look. Yep, there it is. There's all our tables and the data and things like that. So this is going to become our hub, right?
Show me some of the data before we get started, just so we can see what we're working with.
Okay, so let's create a new query, and we're just going to select everything from customers, right? There's our data. So this is a good question because or a good comment because what we're going to do is we're going to, in our data sync, we're going to actually provision a new SQL Azure server in Europe. And what we're going to do is in our data sync, we're actually going to provision and apply a filter and synchronize Germany data over to that North Europe server, right?
Cool.
So that's what we're going to do. So here's all our data, 91 rows.
Right. So we can have, what you're saying is we can have a hub that's sitting in, what was it, South Central U.S.?
South Central U.S.
And that's like our master of all our data.
Yep.
And we've got all these other little satellite deployments, perhaps regional offices or something like that, that are going out and synchronizing down only the data set that's specific to them.
Right. So what we're going to do is, you know, let's say where country equals, we're going to do Germany, right?
Right.
And there's 11 records there.
Awesome.
We could also query the, because what we're going to do is we're going to synchronize customers and orders. If we did orders, we'll know that there is 830 rows there, but we're going to filter down on Germany, and maybe about 100 and some odd rows from the Germany orders are going to go over, right?
Awesome. Let's see it. Let's get that hub going.
Okay, so let's click close here. Let's get into our sync group. So the way that this begins is we just simply create a sync group. Sync group defines the hub and spokes and where we, you know, where our databases reside. So okay. To do that, we're simply, now we could, there's two ways to do this, which is really cool. We could, if we click on any one of these, they actually start a wizard, right? So step one, step two, step three, it actually walk you through step by step by step. Yep. If you want to just, you know, go and do it yourself, just click the create and everything just shows up right here and you go, right? Now, so if you're new to this, maybe you do the wizard, right?
Yep. If you're not cool like Scott, you just press create.
You just
Scott can do this in his sleep. Like, he literally just, you know.
Okay, so what we're going to do is everything must have a sync group name, so we're going to just call this my sync, right? Oh, yep. If I can
type.
Typos. Yep, few typos. All right, the next step is let's create our hub. So very simple. All I have to do is click on the regions or the sections that you want to create your databases. So we're going to create our hub first.
Right.
And I'm going to go back here because I want the name of this database. Or actually, you know, so I'm going to grab, actually, you know what? So I'm going to click cancel here, and I'm going to click back out. I'm always changing. And the reason I'm doing this is because I need to go back into my database, and the first thing I need to do is I want to provision that North Central US, and because I need the two server names for synchronization.
So just to summarize, you're going to create a hub, but you also want to create a subscriber.
Correct.
That subscriber is going to be in Europe, and the hub is going to be in
South Central US. Right.
So you need both the logical server names for those two regions.
For both those regions, right?
Okay. So let's create Europe region.
Yeah. So first thing I'm going to do is I'm going to go and I'm going to this server name is my South Central US. So I actually need that one. So I'm going to highlight.
Can't you remember it?
I'm trying. Corey, can you remember that, please, for me?
Okay.
And then, so at least we can remember .database.windows.net. That's the easy part. It's the first 10 characters. All right, so now we're going to go click, and we're actually going to create a new server. So I'm going to say create. I'm going to select North Europe. Click next.
Awesome.
And then this is asking me for an administrator login and password. This is essentially, if you're familiar with SQL Server, this is like the SA account, right? Okay. So I'm going to, same thing.
It's the SA account, but we should call out the fact that you can't actually have an administrative login.
That is called SA. Right.
Or administrator.
That's why I said like an SA account, right? So I'm going to click next here. So yes, you cannot call it SA or admin or administrator. Yeah, it must be something else.
There's a couple of different password restrictions as well.
Because this is SQL Server, right? The password policies follow the exact password policies as SQL Server on-premise, right?
Okay.
So you can't have password or admin or things like that, right?
Okay.
Same password policy. So I'm going to click next. Now the next thing it asks me for, if you've provisioned SQL Azure servers before, it's, okay, what are the firewall rules?
Yep.
Right? And the firewall rules allow access to, to the actual server and the databases on the server, right? So we actually need to define some servers. So we're actually going to do a couple things.
Default, nothing can connect to it.
By default, nothing can connect. Yep. There's no firewall rules. And firewall rules are IP address based, right? Yep. You have to have your name, and you can specify either a single IP address or a range, okay?
Okay.
So now, by default, like you mentioned, nothing can get to it. But if I want, internal Azure services to get to that, I need to select this checkbox here.
Like data sync.
Thank
awesome.
You. Right, so I need that.
Okay.
And just so that we can get access to it if we need to, I'm going to add one. And luckily, you know, I love this because you can tell Microsoft put some thought into this. They actually tell you what your IP address is, right? So I'm going to highlight this and just call this my rule. But I'm going to do just a range. I'm going to say 1 to 255.
So this is so your local machine here can also connect directly to that server.
Right.
Cool.
So now I have two rules. I'm going to click finish, and now I have this new server over here, right? And there it is, right? It is in
North Europe,
and so I need this
Ta-da.
Name. Ta-da! Right. So could you go to North Europe, please, and make sure that this? No, I'm kidding. All right. Mm-hmm. So there's my. So I need those two names. So now we can actually go back to DataSync, and we'll start it. So we'll create a new sync group. All right. So we'll call this again, my sync.
Okay, so what happened to the last one you created?
Cancel out, it basically says, hey, do you want to get rid of this, yes or no? So,
okay, now we're creating this.
So now we're starting over creating a new one.
Okay,
cool. Right, so I'm going to now grab this server name, because this is my hub. This is the one that's in North Central. This is the one we imported that database to.
Okay.
So I'm going to create my hub, and there's my server. So my server name.
Mm-hmm.
And this is called, is it Sync Demo?
I think it was Sync Demo.
Okay. You know, let's go back and make sure. All right, it is Sync Demo. So both of our databases in this case are Sync Demo.
You have a mind like a steel trap.
That's right. Right. So we're going to log in here.
Super secret password.
Super secret password called password.
I'm watching his keys. I'm trying to figure it out.
All right, so connection successful, so I'm good. All right.
Cool. So that's our hub?
That's our hub. Awesome. So it says not deployed, so but nothing's been provisioned yet, but it says, okay, it's tagged this as our hub. Next thing to do is now we want to create
a spoke,
right? So what we're going to do is we're actually going to go to this new server over here. We need to create at least the database, right? We don't have to create any objects in it, but we need to create the database. So we're going to go back. We can go back.
Can we do it in the portal?
We could. Let's actually just do it here.
Let's do it from here.
So this is our.
It's your hub server.
Yep. So this is our hub. So let's connect to our spoke.
Awesome. So while that's going and connecting there, when we say connecting to the spoke, really we're just connecting to a logical server, and we're going to have one DB within that reside. Residing within that we're going to set up as a spoke.
Correct.
We could quite literally have multiple DBs for anything else.
Anything else. This is just a one-to-one, right? Yep. But we could have multiple logical servers throughout the United States, just like you explained earlier, right?
Cool.
So there's no database here, so we're actually going to create a new database. Again, you're getting a lot more than just data sync, so and it's free, right? So we're just going to say create database, and we'll call this also sync demo EU.
Okay.
Right? Now, because it's a 1 gigabyte data, you know, web edition, we don't have to specify anything special. So,
those are the defaults. It'll always be web and one. Or I guess I can't say always, but the current default is web, 1 gigabyte web.
Yeah. So if you don't specify anything after this, this creates a 1 gigabyte web edition.
Cool.
Right. So we're gonna execute that, and there is our there's our database, right there. Okay. So now go back to our portal. We're going to paste in our logical server name for North Europe. Now we have to enter the database, and this was sync demo EU.
Oh,
EU, not
DU. EU. That's a doozy.
That's a doozy. So equals Scott, and the password. And again, let's test this. Okay, now before I click add, we want to point out one thing here, right? This is the sync, set sync direction. This is, are we doing a bi-directional? If you drop this down, we can say we're going to either do sync to the hub, sync from the hub, or bi-directional, right?
Okay.
This applies to the sync group. We can't apply, you know, you can't yet do at the table level, right? This applies at the sync group level. So, but again, we can, you know, we get to some level of granularity to say, you know, yeah, we can do, you know, one directional or multi-directional, and which one wins, right?
Okay. Cool.
So, all right. So we're going to say bi-directional. We're going to click add.
Cool.
There we go. All right. So there's our hub and our spoke, and our, you know, two different data centers. Yep. One in South Central, one in U.S., and one in North Europe.
Okay.
Great. Now, so are we done? No, we're not done. The next thing we have to do is we need to scroll over and we need to define configure the sync group, right? What is what are we syncing? What data are we syncing?
Yep.
How often are we syncing it? And then kind of in a conflict resolution, who wins?
And filters.
And filters. Yeah. That's the data set.
Right.
So the first thing we're going to do is we're not going to change this because we're not going to wait 30 minutes. Chirp, chirp, chirp. Right? We're not going to do that.
Yep.
So we're basically going to leave that at 30 minutes because we can synchronize
that's
manually.
That's a 30-minute interval that it will sync between the two DBs, right?
Right.
What's the lowest we can put that?
5 minutes.
Awesome.
Right? But we're going to, the next thing we're going to do, so we're going to leave that as the way it is, but we're going to set the conflict resolution, which basically says in the event that there's a conflict, who wins, right? So if I enter a record on premise or, you know, in the hub or the spoke, and I enter a record, you know, or modify the same record in the hub, and there's a synchronization, who wins? Well, we have to define that. So we're just going to say the hub wins. He's the master.
So in the terrible scenario that someone from Germany is going in and hacked into their database and started modifying data, at least anything from, let's say, corporate office in the U.S. will take precedence over anything that's changed.
Right. If the same record is modified, right? So,
customer. And we change the address in the master DB, but we also change it in one of the spokes.
Right, in one of the spokes.
Then the hub is going to win for that particular record.
For that particular record, we've designated the hub will win.
Okay.
Right?
Cool.
All right, so almost done. So what we're going to do now is we're going to edit the data set. So we're basically going to say, define the data set.
Okay.
Okay. So we're going to sync demo, and first of all, you know, what tables do we want to synchronize? All
right.
So we're going to say customers and orders, and we want all columns all columns in there to synchronize.
Yep.
Right. Now we could just say, okay, we're done, click OK, and that means just all records are going to go, right? Yep. Mm-hmm. But we want to apply a filter. So we're going to say on the customer's record, we want to apply we want to filter for Germany, for the country, right? So we're going to scroll down, and we're going to say, right? In the filtering, and this is great because you can apply multiple filters. You can say and, or, and have multiple criteria. But we're just going to say where, you know, I'm going to hit F11 here so we can see this a little better, because I want you to see what happens down here, right?
Yep.
So we're going to say Germany, right? Yep. So it actually adds that filter clause for us.
Okay. Nice.
So, and, you know, we're applying this at the customer, but because of the built-in relationships between customer and orders, the filtered orders records will also go, right? So it won't take all 800 and something. It'll take, you know, just the Germany ones, right? So we're going to click OK here, right? And at this point, click back F11. At this point, essentially for our first part, we're done, right? Will it sync? No, because we haven't really deployed the synchronization, right? So the next thing we have to do is actually go up here to the toolbar and just click deploy. And you'll notice when we click deploy, it's waiting for sync operation. You'll see provisioning.
Right. So this is setting up that configuration that we've just applied.
Correct.
To those DBs.
To those DBs. So if we actually go back to our databases here and refresh the list, you can see that now. If you're familiar with the sync framework.
Yep.
This is sync framework information. It's going and setting all this information up.
Right. So this is our hub you're looking at the moment.
The hub?
And it's gone and dropped in these data sync
tracking tables.
Okay. These are the information that says these are the tables that track when I make a change and things like that. We can also go down to our spoke.
See how that one's going.
And see how that one's going.
Right, so it's gone and applied that, but it's also provisioned the schema for us.
Correct, it did the schema, and now if you go back to our portal, it's actually synchronizing.
So it's pushing data now?
It's actually, it will actually sync our data at the same time. Cool. Right, so the initial creation will actually do an initial sync.
Okay.
So while this is going, so this shouldn't take too long. We'll come back in a few minutes when this finishes, and then what we're actually going to do in the next step is we're actually going to add our on-premise sync data or our on-premise database, and so we can synchronize both the cloud and on-prem.
Nice.
Right. Well, if this finishes, it shouldn't take too long. We'll come back in a second. Okay, so the synchronization is done, right, as you can see. So we have two statuses, though. We have our hub is good, and our spoke has a warning.
Right.
What's great about this is we can actually go see what happened. So if we actually go up to the log viewer, right, it tells us, hey, here's what happened, right? Yep. And we got a warning on this, right? It did say it completed successfully, but if we hover over this, it says, here's what actually happened. Or we can actually click copy it to the clipboard, and let's go back here to our notepad, and we can go there, and it tells us, and it says, hey, there's some conflict, right? So it succeeded, but there was some foreign key constraint issues and things like that.
So that would be, so you've done this by purely, for example, to show...
Correct.
...show something, and what you're trying to demonstrate is you added a row filter to the customers table, but you didn't add a row filter to the orders table. So Europe has got a subset of the data being customers, and then this was trying to insert orders for other regions because we didn't filter the orders table.
Right.
Right. So this is cool to see when that happens. So when people are building this out, the best approach for them would be to add the filter to both the customers and the orders table.
We did this, you know, so you can, it at least says, you know, the first five rows failed, and so what happened is that, you know, so we want to filter just those records and try to insert all the orders, but because there's no records, it's just you know what. So if we look at the data, we know that we can get, just those orders from Germany, but, you know, there's, so this is a great way. What we wanted to illustrate was, if there's an error, you can go look to see what happened.
Yeah.
Right, from the log viewer.
And just to be clear, if people obviously didn't want to push that redundant data down and have it error out, which I don't think you'd want to do, apart from demonstrating, you know, the great error logging there, is to add the filter to both tables.
Yeah, add the filter for both tables.
Right.
Yeah, because you'd technically be charged the bandwidth for synchronizing across to the European data center. Yep. So that's actually a good tip to point out.
Great. Yeah,
good point. So let's check out the data.
All right, so let's go back and look at the data. So we're going to go to our spoke, which is here.
All right.
That's a new query. And we're just going to say select star from customers, select star from orders, right? Uh-huh. So we should, in our top query,
All right.
You can scroll that up. There's just Germany, so 11 records of Germany.
Nice.
Right? And there's only, and then if we, there should be 22 records just from Germany. So these IDs here should match these IDs here.
Great.
Right? So we got customers and orders, right?
Awesome.
So if you remember, right, there was like 130 or 140 records of orders. We just got the Germany records.
Yep. Awesome.
Okay.
So if I were, given that this was a bidirectional sync, if I change data here, it gets pushed up to the server, and vice versa.
Vice versa, yep.
So that's something cool to note, but I'm really interested in seeing how I can actually set up a sync to my on-prem DB.
Perfect. Yep, let's do that now. All right, so we're going to stay here in our sync group, and very easily I'm going to go back and I'm going to copy this server because I need this server information at some point.
So that's our hub?
That's our hub, right? So I'm going to click Add Local Database On-Premise, right? And what I'm going to do is I'm going to add a new SQL Server database to the sync group. Had I already created, provisioned, installed the agent and things like that, I could select this top node. But I need to select the new, add a new SQL Server database because I haven't installed anything yet. So I'm going to select that. I want bidirectional. I'm going to click Next, right? And then what I want to do now is I haven't installed the agent, so I'm going to install a new agent. So I click Install a new agent.
This is going to install on your on-premise machine.
This is going to install on my in this case, my laptop, so my on-premise machine. I'm going to click Next. And now I get two steps, right? So step one is I need to download the agent. So it takes me to a new page in the browser.
Yep.
And I'm going to click this one, which is the MSI. It's like download. I'm just going to run that.
Yeah, so typically you would actually just download the MSI to a USB key because you're actually going to be installing this on your database servers on-prem.
So. Yep. So I'm going to click Next. I'm going to agree. Read the EULA. Click Next for Corey. All right, now the important step here in this is, this agent needs to run under an account that... that has access to, because it's a service that has a DB. Right. So luckily it says, give you the information. So I'm going to log in with my, because it's my local box. So I'm going to say Redmond, Scott KL, and then my password. Because I want it to run under my account, right? So my top secret, super secret password. Click Next.
Got the first four characters so far through the show.
I've got the last two.
Awesome. You're working on it. Next. And we're going to very quick install. We've got to get through the... Yep, there we go.
Okay. Cool. So this is installing an agent that will talk to our hub to coordinate the sync between our on-prem DB and our hub.
That's correct. And once it's installed, if you look, it actually puts that... Let's see... it usually puts that on our start menu. So where'd that go?
What if you type sync agent?
There we go. Microsoft Sync Server. Yeah, very good. It usually puts that on the automatically adds it to your start menu. So we're gonna do sync agent, right? And I'm gonna say yes, right? And what we're gonna do here is we're going to so next thing we're gonna have to do. So it's installed. We're going to specify an agent name, right? So we're going to say, just call it
007.
My agent. Yes, we could just call it James Bond. That'd be awesome.
We could do that.
Okay. So specify an agent name, right? And then we have to generate a key because we need to launch this, but we have to include that agent key here, right? This is how those two start talking to each other.
And securely.
Securely, yes. Right. That's an important point. Yes, it is securely. So we're going to say generate the key. There's our key.
Cool.
I'm going to copy that through the clipboard.
Convenient.
Go back here. Paste that key in.
Sweet.
Click OK. Right? Done. Now I can register my on-premise SQL Server. Okay.
Awesome. So you don't. Do you have to do that through the portal, or you do it through this?
I need to register my on-premise through here.
Awesome.
Right. So what I'm going to do is I'm just going to register. So I'm going to go credit, and I'm going to register a. I can say Windows off. My server though is going to be my local server. So this is going to be. I'm going to copy. The easiest way to do this is just grab it from here. So control C, paste, and then we want Windows off. And the database, remember, is called sync. Demo.
All right.
Test connection. Done. Cool. Right. We can enable SSL if we want, so I'm going to say save.
Should we do that?
Let's do that. Yeah. Oh, I don't have certificates. You need a certificate on there. So okay. You know what? I'm going to uncheck that and click save.
Cool.
All right. So there is my registered on-premise database, and it says it is reachable.
Right.
So I'm going to go, I can actually minimize this now, and I'm going to click next.
All
right. Right. Now, theoretically, I'm going to click Get Database List, which refreshes this. So this now went back onto communicating through the agent.
Yep.
There's my database.
Cool.
Right.
Do you know what port the agent communicates on? Like, you didn't have to open any firewall rules here, so I'm assuming it's either 80 or 443.
Yeah. Exactly. Okay. It's a standard, right? But this is why you would want to encrypt that, like on that box, right? Yep. To install a.
So you've got the agent key plus you've got the SSL option.
The SSL option, right?
Right.
Okay. So at this point, I'm done, right?
Nice.
I can click finish, and there's my sync group, right, with my local. I now need to deploy this because this is not deployed.
Right.
So I'm going to say deploy now, and it's going to redeploy just the portions of the things that have not been deployed.
Right.
Okay. So we can actually go back. So this is now provisioning, and it shouldn't take long because it's already been provisioned, but the more important thing is if we go back to this database again, it's going to add those same tables.
Yep.
Tracking tables to this database.
Right.
Okay.
So, out of interest, does this, now that we've added this on-prem SQL DB, does it get the same rules applied to it as far as the tables for sync that were set up in the original sync group? So, given you said, let's sync only orders and customers.
Yep.
Is that going to go and apply this to this local DB now?
So, that's a good question. We'll take a look. Because it's the original database, we sync this, it may go... it won't delete. It shouldn't delete the things that are there. It's only going to... it'll track just the ones that we've specified to synchronize, right?
Okay. Looks good.
So, it looks good. So, if we go back here, hopefully this won't make a liar of me, right? So, we should see the same table. So, there's order details and products. But notice it's only tracking customers and orders.
Right.
So we could make a change to order details and products all day long.
Yeah.
Right. It just won't get synchronized.
Right.
Okay. So now we're done. Right. So we could actually make a change to the hub or to any of the spokes. Watch those get synchronized. So we can actually go and say let's change. Now remember it's only going to filter on Germany. Right. Yeah. So let's go into our on-premise database. Let's close a lot of these windows. We don't need those now. So just to wrap up, let's go and change one record. This is, we don't need that. So let's go and change one record in customers.
All right.
And so let's select star from customers where the country equals Germany. Right, so let's change one of these. Right, so let's just change the company name real quick for one of these. So let's say update customers set company name equal to where customer ID equals, and let's change ELF key because that just seems to be a popular one. There was a guy that worked at Microsoft actually changed his. Got a customer license plate with that.
Was that his alias?
No.
Oh, it's just because it's part of the Northwind database.
Part of Northwind database. And database. A lot of people were like, thought that was good.
I thought you said Alki for a second.
Oh. No, all right, so we're going to change this to, we're not going to make it too complicated. We're just going to, you know what, actually let's make it, we're going to say Corey.
Okay, sounds good.
Oh, that's a company name.
Can I at least be incorporated?
Yeah, absolutely.
There we go.
Inc.
Okay.
Excellent. All right. So we should, we're going to update that.
Cool.
Okay, one row affected.
All right.
So now, We're not going to wait 30 seconds or 30 minutes.
30 minutes.
30 minutes, so we're just going to say sync now.
All right. Let's do it.
All right. So it's synchronizing. So you can see all everything synchronizing. The question, though, is pop quiz, right? So will that change get replicated to the other hub, to the other spoke in the synchronization?
Should be, right? Because it goes to master, then back down?
My guess would it wouldn't be, because we changed it in the on-prem database, which means any sync would come from the hub. We did say bi-directional, though. So
yeah. Right, so we changed it here. So this is good. Yeah. This is our synchronizing. So the question is, obviously we're expecting the change to be replicated to the hub, right? So we should be able to query the hub and see that.
We did also mention that the conflict resolution was for the hub. So wouldn't that mean if the hub's data is different,
that's the conflict resolution means if you're the hub and I'm the spoke.
And we change the same record.
Right. Okay,
we didn't change the hub, so there's not going to be a conflict resolution.
Great. Think of it as like a conflict in TFS.
Yeah.
Right. So the question is, will the same record show up in the other spoke in North Europe?
My assumption would be yes.
So you say no.
No,
you say yes.
Yeah. All right. I want it to. I don't want to have to sync a second time for it to go from the hub down there.
Okay. So I'm going to say no.
All right.
Okay.
So and then what's your reasoning behind that? Because it's still synchronizing here. So
the reasoning behind that is there was actually a question on the forums about this, right? And this exact question. Yep. Someone said, if I do this, how come in my sync it's not syncing to all the other hubs? Yeah. And
it's perhaps an arbitrary order that it's syncing with.
No, it's just it's a two sync scenario,
right?
So it's going to sync one, and then it's going to wait for the next sync to sync and push those out.
Okay,
right. We can see this in a second once it's done syncing.
Because I guess all of these will sync at different time frames at that 30 minute interval, based on where they're provisioned.
Yep.
Okay.
So you'll be right for 30 minutes, and then Nick and I will be right for the rest of the day.
For the rest of the day.
Okay. So you're going to buy us lunch?
Sure. Sure, just because I'm right for 30 minutes. All right, so as soon as this comes back and it's done synchronizing, and we're probably running into the same conflict issues we had before, right? Because of the filter.
Well, let's check the hub.
The hub?
While we wait on that second one.
All right, so we're going to copy this. And we're going to go to the hub.
Yep.
Oh, we don't want to update. Though.
Just change that to a select. Star customers.
Let's see if that's changed yet. Sure enough.
Real bad. Nice.
All right.
Awesome.
Woo! All right. Now, let's go back. So we're about done. Still synchronizing. So let's go back and let's go to our other one.
So this is our spoke database?
This is our North Europe spoke database.
Great.
Right. So what I'm going to do is I don't have to type again. Copy paste is your best friend. Hold on, let's make sure, is this still going? It's still synchronizing. Let's just see what happens.
Because it might have actually gotten to that record.
Okay. But, right. Yeah. So we can wait just a little bit more. But realistically, the answer is that it will not sync again.
Right.
Or it won't push that out to North Europe until the second synchronization.
Okay.
Right.
Okay. Makes sense, I guess.
Yeah. What we did is we provisioned, we basically import-export service to take our database from on-premise to SQL Azure, made that our hub, provisioned a new database in North Europe, made that our spoke. Right, synced a subset of data from our hub to our spoke. Then went and provisioned our on-premise database as another spoke on-premise. Installed the agent and then synchronized there. So it's done. Let's wrap up and query this again. So
it shouldn't change because it's going to wait till the next sync, which is 30 minutes.
So now, if we actually clicked synchronize again. Right, it would sync that.
Right. Okay.
But because of the same challenges, right, and the warning, we don't want to wait, two minutes.
Yeah.
Right?
It may be also that then when we hit sync now, it perhaps was syncing the first one, our first spoke, and then doing the on-prem one or vice versa. So it makes sense that you have to wait for that next sync because. What order are they all going to sync in? Don't know.
That's right. So it's going to take, so I clicked synchronize again. We can actually go check and see if it changes that.
Yeah, it's going to take a while to get
it,
to error.
It should take, because it's going to go through and it's going to hit those errors first. But if we came back, we'd see that.
Okay, cool. So I think it's that's really awesome. Mm-hmm. I love it. We've seen a synchronization scenario between cloud databases and on-premise.
All without writing a line of code, right, which is important.
Copy and pasting a couple lines, but that's totally acceptable.
Yep.
And so this is the SQL Azure Data Sync preview.
Correct.
Right. So we'll put a link up on the FAQ for the Data Sync preview.
Mm-hmm.
But I think for now, we should probably move on because we don't want the show to be too long to that time of the week.
That special time where I had to embarrass myself last time because I wasn't quite excited enough.
Well, actually,
Better you than me.
So do you want to take it away today and perhaps do something with a little bit more enthusiasm?
A little bit more oomph. Well, I guess the trend has been the super high five, so I think we should all bring it together for the tip of the week.
Okay.
All right.
How do we do it?
All right.
Distance between the Earth and the Moon at its closest proximity is 238,000 miles. We expect to cover this distance in approximately 48 hours.
See for the first time thrilling pictures of the world of tomorrow.
And we're back.
I totally missed on that one.
Oh, sorry. Woohoo!
That's all right. Welcome back. Now for a tip of the week, there was an announcement not too long ago, I think it was just last week, about the Cloud Ninja metering block for SaaS applications hosted on Windows Azure. So essentially what this thing does is it you can install it either locally or in the cloud or even run it as a command line tool. But essentially what it does is it goes out to your roles and actually looks at IaaS logs and Windows Azure Storage Analytics and a number of other things to figure out who your hot tenants are so you can bill them appropriately. Right. So essentially you can just go out. This is actually using a lot of different .NET technologies. They're using reactive extensions. They're using the TPL libraries. Like, it's incredible code base if you just want to browse through it. But essentially, it gives you the opportunity to just go out and understand a little bit more about who your tenants are and how much they're actually using of your Windows Azure services.
Cool. Yeah. So let's see there. I think I've seen some nice nice gauges. And
yeah, so it gets you a little bit of information. The gauges are pretty nice. And it looks like they're almost maybe possibly HTML5. Which would be interesting. And then they also connect down to Excel using the Power Pivot code. So you have an Excel-based dashboard so you can actually look at all the instrumentation that's going on.
So basically, if I'm some development company and I've built out some SaaS solution and I want to see how much DB, for instance, all of my different tenants are using, this is the way, or a way, to do that, and all the code's provided there for you.
Yeah.
Awesome.
Yeah, exactly.
Looks good.
Yeah.
What's it called?
This looks awesome.
This is it's the Cloud Ninja metering block.
Sort of got a catchy name to it.
It is. It's like ninja-y. Yeah,
anything with ninja in it is pretty cool.
There's a lot of things going on in the development world that's ninja-oriented.
I should have called myself Ninja Nick.
Oh, that would have been awesome.
That would have been awesome for my Twitter handle.
I wonder if it's gone. You should go out and claim it. Don't go out and claim Nick's.
I'll beat you before
Friday. Beat you, yeah. But the cool thing about it as well is two of the team members here, they're actually linked at the bottom, were actually former Microsofties. So
cool.
Kind of a shout out to them as well. And congratulations building an application on Windows Azure.
With a cool name.
Yeah.
Nice. So I think that probably wraps things up, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, so I'd like to really... I'd like to thank you, Scott, for coming on the show today.
My pleasure. It was a lot of fun.
I would like to thank you, too. That was quite awesome.
Thank you very much.
Yeah. So thank you for coming, everyone, and enjoy the rest of your day.
Take care.
See ya.